Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can support us on Anchor. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. This week, we watched The Pale Blue Eye 2022. Veteran detective Augustus Landor investigates a series of grisly murders with the help of a young cadet who will eventually go on to become the world-famous author Edgar Allan Poe. This movie stars Christian Bale, Harry Melling, Lucy Boynton, and Gillian Anderson, and it is directed by Scott Cooper. So, Dale, tell us your thoughts on this film.
I don't know what's going on with like the recent runs of like, well, to me, of these period pieces have really been like in a way. Like this movie is a really, 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 really long slow build, and it does a poor job at times of drawing you like the overall initial case Christian Bale's character of Landor has to solve. Like the process of it really draw you in some kind of way. It's not until we at the end dealing with Harry Melding as who did an amazing job as Edgar Allan Poe, who knew going from Harry Potter as a Dursley, he'd have such an amazing twist of as an actor with his performances. Which one he's been in like the last couple years, just knocking out the park. But his portrayal and performance as Edgar Allan Poe was amazing. And it wasn't until the last confrontation where I actually found myself engaged with the movie between the two of them. So yeah, this movie is a really slow build. And to me, it's an overall example of Netflix's purpose of going for quantity over quality, dropping all their good original shows that everybody loves after two seasons, and spending that money on these high profile films that don't really go anywhere.
Yeah, I thought that I liked this movie. I thought it was pretty good. I think that, you know, because of how the theater system is going, there isn't that much space for these kinds of movies, these mid-budget films. Like, you don't really get to see them in theaters anymore. So streaming is the place where these go. So I do feel like I'm happy at least it ended up somewhere, because this was a fun little period. Well, I don't know if it was fun, but it was entertaining to me, at least towards the end, like you said, like those last 30 minutes or so. I thought it was a good murder mystery period film, which again, you don't really see that much unless it's on streaming. So I enjoyed it for what it was. Was it amazing? No, it definitely wasn't. But I do think that it had a solid idea. The twist was kind of interesting. I mean, I'm sure most people can saw it coming, but murder mysteries, I really don't know who is the person who actually did it until it's revealed. I'm always in the dark. So I enjoyed it, trying to figure it out. I will say that I thought it was shot really well. I thought the cinematography was really good. I thought that everyone was performing their butts off. Everybody was giving in that cast. And it was a really stacked cast of really good British actors. So the acting was amazing. Everyone was just really, really good in the roles. And I thought that the costume design was excellent, all of the dresses, but even the uniforms that the men wear, I thought that those were dope. So it had some redeeming qualities. It wasn't just a huge flop. It was actually sort of interesting. It was kind of a slow build, but again, because it's on streaming, I hit that 2x speed button. So I was kind of, it was a good old pace for me. I was yeah, I can do this. But I was cheating a little bit. But yeah, I thought it was good. It was a nice little thing to put on a like a lazy Sunday afternoon. Like, it was just like a chill vibe.
Yeah. Mia, so I'm not gonna like 100% recant in what I said. I do like the movie was still kind of mid, and it's clearly obvious to see why it wasn't a broad theatrical. Basically, how it ended up on Netflix. But yeah, I do think the performances were outstanding for everybody. I do think the story, you know, and I think it's not just a mix of, well, and like I said, the cinematography and everything, costumes, everything, but that's the story just builds like and drags so long till it gets to like the two twist-ish parts in the movie. But yeah, it's just like a slow, like I'm walking like through a fog of molasses, just trying to get to that point. I'm trying to pull something out of this movie to like keep me interested until like halfway to like the third act, and it goes back down again. It picks up back again near the end.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen other films with Christian Bale where he's in this role of like just like a grizzled older man, whether he's a detective or something else, and then he has to like find something to fight for. But I don't know, I thought it was okay in this situation. I wasn't like completely understanding like where this thing came from. At first I thought that this was a book, but maybe it is a book.
It is
a book. But I thought it was an Edgar Allan Poe book, and it's not. He's just in it. So I was confused. I spent the first half kind of confused, like, what? But honestly, it, like I said, it's not like an exceptional film. But I will say that it was, after a while, I was like, okay, I kind of want to know what's going on at this point. Because they were kind of infusing a couple of different threads where you had the murder of, like, one of these students. One of the cadets, right? And then how he was murdered tied into like a satanic cultish kind of situation. And I was like, okay, so like what's going on with that? And then the doctor just kept like coming up and his family. Like, I was like, what's happening here? Is old girl okay? Who's having these seizures? What happened to his daughter? Like, I had so many questions. So I did want to know the answers to them. And that's what kept me engaged, at least. I was like, I need to know what happens at the end of this, because like you said, they take their time setting everything up. So I'm like, okay, so what's going on? The first twist, I was like, okay. I thought it was the doctor at first. But then I realized actually it was his daughter and the mom. And I guess the brother as well. I guess they all worked in a little a little trio there. But then it was actually Christian Bale who did all this stuff. And I was like, what? Why? And then when they reveal it, it's like, oh, okay. I mean, yeah, I guess if I had the resources, I might have done the same thing. I'm not endorsing murder. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. But anyways, yeah, I was like, this is like a time to kill. Like, that's what the vibes were giving me in that moment. And then when you see how the plan unravels and that the beginning of the movie was the beginning of these murders happening. And I was like, oh, okay, I like that. I like a little, how they kind of tied everything up there. I thought it was, I don't know, maybe I was feeling generous today or that day when I was watching it, but I thought it was pretty interesting, albeit slow.
I do think, you know who probably would have been a, Scott Cooper, but I do think had like helped this project, like the pacing and all, probably would have. Chris Nolan, yeah. For some reason, watching the movie, I got like quasi vibes and everything. So I'm thinking maybe if Nolan had directed this, maybe it would like have been, I don't know, as like pulling teeth to get through.
I think Nolan, yeah, it might have been okay. I also think he has a pacing problem, but that's just my opinion. Not on all of his movies, but definitely on some of them. like, I only remember, like, the first and the third act of Inception. Like, everything that happens in between, I couldn't tell you what happened. Oh, yeah. And I've seen that movie more than once.
That first act of Inception is just mostly... Like, the key point of Inception is the last act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Mm.
I think, like, and had those scenes of probably the murder, not by him, it's like an ominous figure, kind of been shown, I guess, throughout him trying to solve this case, it would probably ratchet tension a bit. Because it goes from, oh, I'm sitting at a dinner parlor, say, hey, a kid's now missing again. It's like, there's no, you don't feel like the impactfulness of it. It's not, it's just... Mm. It's just, hey, another kid's gone. At least had they shown, like, the other kid, like, Bollinger or Behringer, however I'm pronouncing it, had they shown at least him being, like, attacked without revealing Christian Bale, whatever, probably would have added more tension to it, to me.
This might have worked better as a miniseries, honestly. And then at least they would figure out the pacing better, because, like, you know what you're building up to, and maybe you can add some more pieces of action in each episode. Maybe. I don't know if it would have worked better that way, but I think it was okay for this movie. It was long, though. And again, if Netflix didn't have the feature where you could speed it up, I can see how you would feel very dragged through this, because there are some scenes that last just a little too long, or you get those scenes where I think a lot of directors do this, where they're like, oh, we're in a really nice setting, so let's keep showing shots of the setting, like, of the environment. And then after you've seen, like, your fifth mountain, you're like, okay, I think I'm done now.
Those scenes low-key were rest. I remember, you know, yeah, when I was younger, pastor, and stuff like that, and, like, those scenes, oh, I love those scenes like that, so that was, like, part of me wished that this movie was not set during winter, so I could see all those colors and stuff. At least fall would probably work, but, yeah, probably, like, and to me, and looking at this, because looking back, like, this was picked up as originally it was a book that got optioned into a movie. But this writer, he has his whole bag as a writer, taking historical, like, settings and people, turning them into, like, murder mystery type things. And this has, like, been my thing. Like, just because a book does well, like, doesn't necessarily it should be turned to a book. Like, I understand Hollywood's at this point where they're looking for properties and IPs and their depth, like, and there's, like, a dirge, like, a space where they don't have any ideas. So they kind of just now pick up, oh, this is a right away. I do think maybe had they took a little bit more time, because the book that this is based on is from 2006. Doesn't say when it was optioned to a film to by Bradley. Well, it was optioned into a film in 2014. I do think Hollywood probably is take, if they're going to adapt a book, at least take their time and adapt it well, or workshop it a bit. You know, I don't know. But I don't think every book always looks good in your head. Like, oh, let's make a good movie. And then when it actually ends up in the movie, you get something like this or the goldfish. I'm still burned by the goldfish.
No, I totally feel that. I loved a book that I had read called Conversations with Friends, by the same author who wrote Normal People. And everyone loved Normal People. Obviously, Normal People went on to be wildly successful in its television adaptation. But then they adapted that book, which is really hard to adapt, because most of it is all like internal dialogue. So it's really hard to, like, depict that on screen. And it was so bad. Like, it was so terrible. And it absolutely ruined. It didn't ruin the book in terms of, like, how I felt about it. But it did kind of lessen the impact of it, because it's like, you, when you read a book, you already have images of what it's supposed to be like in your head. So when you see it on screen and it flops, like, it's just so, it's just not at all the same quality of what you read and how you envisioned the story. It does feel like a huge letdown. I don't know how wide known this book was, but I can definitely see, like, if you have a book that is very well known and then you turn it into adaption, like, sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. And it really just depends on, like, who's involved with it. But yeah.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about this book. The book was, that's screen adaptions.
It was nominated for an Edgar, which is an old Edgar Allan Poe. For Mystery Riders, are nominated for that, and it was also nominated for a Dagger. It's a UK for best crime writing, so it didn't win those awards, but it was nominated. But I think that's just a lesson from Hunt. Take your time with, you know, getting these film rights for books, you know, soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't feel, I liked Harry Melling's depiction of Edgar Allan Poe, but I did feel like it was a little, I don't know, it was a lot for me. Like, it was just like a lot, and after a while I was like, okay. But also, I don't know what accent he was going for. Like, was it supposed to be Southern, or was it supposed, because, like, in this movie you have people who are doing American accents. Some of them are doing their English accents. So my thing is, like, well, Edgar Allan Poe, I think, is from America.
Well, the America? Thing is, the book is, the movie is set during 1830. So the whole, like, schism between American accents and British accents as far as English hasn't really come to the front yet. I was kind of okay from that sense of a lot of the English actors still use British accent, because that cultural vibe or divide has been as present. I don't know about his Edgar Allan Poe voice, because it did sound like he was doing a bit southernish voice, which, right, it sounds odd that Edgar Allan was, like, born in Massachusetts. Virginia.
Yeah,
so he's predominantly,
so, like, why
a northeastern voice or accent would have been fine. So
yeah, and I was fine with, like, people having different accents in it. I think my thing was, like, because I know the actor is from England, and I think that's the thing. Maybe I don't know if that's, like, everyone might not actually think about this, but I know for me, accents are one thing that really I kind of hone in on sometimes, because it has the ability to take me out of the moment occasionally, especially if I know what your original accent is and you're trying to do a different one. It's like, sometimes it's kind of hard. Like, I hear certain things, I'm like, that sounds a little weird. And then I miss the moment of what I'm not even paying attention to what you're saying at that point. But yeah, it was a weird choice to have him do an English actor do a Southern accent, even though the character is from the East Coast, from the Northeast, actually. I was like, how does this make any sense? I was so confused. I went with it because he was giving the performance. So I ignored it a little bit, but it was one of the things that kind of took me out of the film a little bit.
I think it's one of those things, because it's not a, like, American actor or British actor thing. I think it's an actor just doing, how should I say this? Doing beyond, like, oh, this, I think this fits the character, so I'm going to do it. Like, yes, it might fit, yeah, like, how the person, because his portrayal of Edgar Allan is very quiet, very demure, very meek, but because he's an intellectual, it gives off a sense of aristocratic sensibility. It's the time period it's in, so from then on, he kind of makes, okay, I'll do, like, Southern aristocrat kind of vibe. Like, those things, like, those thought threads are good to go through, like, because you're only focusing on the character itself. Edgar Allan's a real person, and if this movie's going to be playing in the States, most Americans know Edgar Allan's American and predominantly from the Northeast. So you hear our North, no matter where you are, where our accents are culturally distinct. So the fact that everybody else is there is speaking an accent, which works, and you're the only person speaking a Southern accent is really jarring a bit.
Yeah, I was like, that's a character choice.
Yeah.
Cool. An artistic choice. I will say that Christian Bale is like such a good actor. The issue with Christian Bale is that he's in movies that like aren't that wonderful this year, but maybe that's just him being like, you know what, I'm gonna just do whatever I feel called to. The guy who directed it, Scott Cooper, also directed Prisoners. What is the name of that movie? It starts with a P. Is it Prisoners? No, Prisoners is Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
This was another movie that he was in with Jonathan Majors
Scott Cooper?
Huh?
You said the director, Scott Cooper? Doesn't have a movie. He's done Crazy Heart, Out of Furnace, Black Mass, Hostels, and Antler.
Hostels, that's what it's called. Hostels, how are you gonna be? Hostels, Prisoners, you are enclosed in a space, you're not able to be freed. Those two things are running through my mind. Anyway, but yeah,
stretching.
Hostels. He did, and that again was another like mid-budget movie. Christian Bale plays another detective type of guy in like the Midwest. So it was like, maybe they just want to partner up again and just do that. But I will say he is an excellent actor. Like, he, every time he's in something, he always gives like 110%.
Yeah.
So despite how you feel about the movie itself, like, he showed up to work and he was ready to like get into it. So I give props for that for Christian. He's also a producer on this film. So he wanted to make this happen.
I think you're right. Christian Bale does take projects on that are interesting to him. I think he likes playing characters. I think that bit of Catch-22 for him this year, playing interesting characters in projects to a degree, because he does like to vary his film roles a lot. You know, most actors do like two types of movies, that's it. Like, dove in and put his feet in Marvel, Thor Love and Thunder, which probably Marvel's worst movie to date because of everything that's wrong with it. He does try and experiment and play different characters in this film. I will give him that.
Yeah.
I wish this movie had a bit more of the tension that him and Edgar had at near the end, carrying throughout the whole plot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say about this movie.
It's funny, now that I'm looking at Hostels, it also features like West Point Lieutenant, whatever, in this movie set at West Point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like the same, it's like the same vibe, basically. Same thing. All right, so let's wrap it up. How do you feel about this movie overall?
You are right. This is not the type of movie that would have been picked up. So this, the best pace for it to have at home is probably it. It's on a streaming platform. Everything about this movie is good except for the plot. And if it wasn't for, even though it still baffles me to this day, getting rid of good projects and having like overpaying for projects like this to a degree, at least it was given a platform to where and so I would say this movie would have been perfect. You know that dead period after like summer-ish it's coming out, this movie would have probably been a good spot to, I don't know, throwing stuff out there, but yeah. If you're bored and looking for a movie you like Christian Bale and you want to see Gillian Anderson pop up once in a while, Robert Duvall pop up in once in a while, get this movie, I wouldn't, you know, say rousing review. I'd probably give it a solid 6 out of 10. The one thing holding back this movie a lot is early. So yeah, other than that, movie's still good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this movie was decent. It's a decent film. I think if you want to watch some good performances, you can watch it. The scenery is pretty. The dresses are really nice. But other than that, it's not like amazing. So honestly, like if you're in the mood to watch like a gothic whodunit, just watch Wednesday. It's yeah. much more entertaining. But everyone did give in this film. So I'm giving it like a solid like C+. maybe like a B- for effort, I don't know.
Look, nothing's wrong with C is good degrees. C came
pretty. You will C pass. Is, you will your
pass.
Class,
you will pass. He will so, pass.
Yeah.
So after that, moving on to the news. First off, it has finally happened. Avatar 2 has officially hit 2 million globally, putting it in probably the 6th highest global earning movies ever. Our game of Titanic, Star Wars Force Awakens. I didn't even realize Star Wars Force Awakens was like the 4th highest grossing movie of all time, considering everything that happened with the sequel trilogy. It's also the 4th highest grossing movie time overseas. It's been drawing amazing in France, China, France, Germany, South Korea, UK, and Australia, Mexico, Spain. It's made so far $1.24 billion. It's made of 600, basically a rank 13th all time as far as again, Cameron, how he pulled it off with like Avatar space with a story that is really fun. Somehow he folded off box office numbers like that. Zoe does make box office history, becoming the first actor to appear in multiple movies. Just over 2 years. Of course, she was in Avatar in this one, and she also was seen, wasn't the character, but she was also seen in War and Avengers Endgame. So she was in that two properties that have basically burst cinematic bubble for how she felt stuck to franchises, but still grateful for other actors don't get this opportunity. Although I do feel that it's kind of weird. Most movies that gross this high, you can say, oh, I reckon. I feel bad for having these set as miserably box office wise globe. She is just seen in the whole. Or additionally, I really would like her being a woman of color. She got the opportunity to actually be herself in, you know, these roles. But
yeah, I mean, she was in Colombiana. If y'all watched that that movie from 2009 or something like that. Yeah, I think I don't want to talk about that. That seems. What I'll say is that I think she's very suited for these kinds of roles. I think if you try to put her in like a serious drama or something, it probably wouldn't work because I don't think that that's her skill set. I think this is where she thrives the best, where she can, you know, be strong and powerful and do a lot of the physical action stuff, which not everyone could do. That's not, you know, that's a very specific skill. So, but listen, she's the property that she's been in, this Avengers Pirates of the like the girl's Star getting Trek. Her bag, so
you to your point, you are right, because it seems like the movies where she's covered in paint or whatever, she gives more because she has more to work off with her character.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in other news, Rust actor Alec Baldwin, along with other crew, will be charged in the Helena Hutchins on set death. That happened 2 years ago, where Alec Baldwin, they were rehearsing a scene and he shot, there were live rounds inside the gun. And as he was doing the scene, you know, those bullets were discharged and Helena Hutchins, who was the cinematographer, I believe, was killed and the director was injured. So he's going to be charged with, I think, I want to say it's involuntary manslaughter. Let me not. Wait, let me actually say.
It's involuntary remember manslaughter. What
it was, yeah, it was involuntary manslaughter, I think. Like yes, and basically I didn't want to like say the wrong charges, but yeah, so that happened last week. His team responded and said like they're gonna fight it. SAG-AFTRA, which is the union for actors, called the New Mexico prosecutor's Rust argument wrong and uninformed. Basically, they were saying that, like, it's not an actor's job to know, like, oh, if there are live rounds in this prop or in this gun. You know, like, that's not my job. Like, you have people on set to handle those things. Which is true. Like, yes, people were hired to do exactly that. However, they didn't do their job. And what's more is as the investigation continues to unravel, you see that that whole safety, like the safety protocols that were going on that set were terrible. Like no one was really doing their job all that well. And as not only an actor, but a producer on the film, which Alec Baldwin is, you have a lot more responsibility. Like as a producer, that's one of your main jobs, is to make sure that the set is safe. So yes, we know that there are people to take care of that. So you're not thinking like, oh, if I shoot this gun, it's going to kill someone. But as a producer, you do have a responsibility to make sure the safety is being taken care of. And so maybe because SAG is the actors union and not, I don't know if they represent producers, directors, and all the rest. I think they have their own unions.
They have their own.
I'm not. Right. So maybe from an actor's point of view, yes, maybe I get what you're saying. But also, I don't really understand why SAG-AFTRA gave a statement at all. But that's just my opinion. I feel like no one thought this was ever going to happen, but there were a lot of signs to show that the safety was not being taken care of on set, especially when it came to guns and, you know, just the use of firearms overall on that set. And also, like, why couldn't you use a prop gun? And also, like, why would you shoot it directly at someone? Like, it's just, there are so many questions that you can have and conflicting feelings about it, but regardless of what SAG-AFTRA or Alec Baldwin has to say, he is going to be charged with involuntary manslaughter at the end of the day, so.
And the thing is, I think SAG should not have got involved with it, seeing as now this is considered, you're defending him as on a labor level as an actor. Remember, at the time when this happened in 2001, they were in the midst of labor issues with all the below-the-line crew, which is most, if you know, SAG is like one of the biggest, strongest unions. All the other unions were like, yo, we want this, we want fair stuff, and at that time, there were freeze. And Alec Baldwin, as a producer, they started cutting corners, and they were hiring non-union people. So once you hire non-union people, they're not going to know the proper guidelines and protocols. Had he done his due diligence as a proper producer and said, yes, I understand there are labor issues going on. We're going to hold production. But no, they want to continue and rush this, you know, to save money. And probably had they decided, you know what? Yeah, you guys are having labor issues right now as, you know, a below line crew and workers and stuff like that. You know what? We're going to retroactively pay you a fair wage to stay on, because we're dealing with weapons, live weapons on this set that we need to be taken properly care for. So as a on the talent side, SAG shouldn't have said anything, because at the end of the day, he is held accountable. He's the last person in line when issues happen on set because of his inactions as a producer cutting corners, trying to rush out this movie during what should have been a production freeze, which dealing with labor negotiations and you hire non-union talent to continue to do so. So, and it's not just him being charged because the armorer who was responsible for handling the weapons, because when this happened, they're reporting that crew people were messing around with the guns on set, using live rounds afterwards. Like the armorer, your on-set armorer who's responsible for the maintenance and care of all these weapons, she's also been charged with involuntary manslaughter and the AD charged for negligent use of a deadly weapon. So, yeah, and those unions, the other unions haven't spoken out in defense of Hannah. She's not union. And the AD directors do have a union as well. They haven't spoken out. But SAG decides we're going to defend Alec Bonney. It's not a good look for SAG at all.
Yeah.
On continuing that, it is Sundance season. We, of course, are particularly, you'll get our thoughts on that next week. But, you know, Dakota Johnson, you know, she got outed for, I guess, for being a Nepo baby a couple of years. But, you know, I don't know how people did not know that she was a Nepo baby, but she decides, you know, poke fun at Armie Hammer, who's been the butt of the industry as far as Hollywood for a while. She kind of took shots at him during part of the show honoring Luca Guadagnino. She said it was here at Sundance 2017 that audience experienced a film that is characterized by iconic approach to storytelling. The vision and style that is called by your name, Johnson told the crowd. Joking, sadly, I wasn't in that one. It was fortunate. Luke had me play the role of a peach, but our schedules conflicted, and she continued to say thank God, because she would have been Armie Hammer tried to eat. She got it. I don't really think it was kind of necessary, but that's kind of the Dakota gives off a more, as an actress, a more blunted version of the person to me that Jennifer Lawrence tries to appear. She just says whatever's on her mind, whether it's good or bad. Spats with Ellen when Ellen says something. She's like, no, Ellen, you're wrong. That's not what happened. Like, she just does not care about decorum in certain situations. I kind of find weird that somehow Hollywood still gives her projects, even though she kind of shits on everybody as an actress. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it was very, this is a very interesting moment. Like, when I saw it happen, like, as it was coming through on social media, I felt, like, weird about it, because I was like, yeah, I guess it's, like, I don't even know if I would say it's funny, but I think it was funny coming from her, mainly because, one, you're there honoring Luca, who Armie was in that movie, so, two, the movie Bones and All has had a little bit of a tough time kind of coming through, mainly because people keep associating it with Armie Hammer and his cannibalism, because the movie is about two cannibalistic, like, kids. So, you know, the joke was a little weird. I don't know. I felt a little weird about it, because it was like, why? And also, like, when all this stuff with Armie Hammer was happening, Dakota Johnson was, like, defending him. She was like, yeah, you know, I feel like we're going to lose so many good artists because people are getting canceled. Like, we talked about that on this show. Like, it was a whole thing. And then she turns around and, like, makes a funny joke about it. I don't get that at all, actually. And I don't think it's really funny, because there were a lot of women who are still traumatized because of what he did. So I don't know how... It was a weird choice. I'll say that. It was a very weird choice, especially coming from her. Like, it was just weird. Like, I don't know. The vibe was weird. Like, I didn't really think it was... I think it was bold of her to do something like that. It was very bold. But like you said, she's a bold gal. So maybe this is just fitting with her personality. But I don't know. It was weird.
I don't think the time or place warranted it to make it about Arnie. Talking about Luca Guadagnino, especially considering, you know, prior to Amber, Johnny Depp, and then she also did work with Solid Shia LaBeouf, who even during Peter Butter Falcon had issues prior before these kind of things. So I think she's like the wrong person to kind of take light at those jokes, especially considering Les joined it more Shia, that she was working Shia still. Not like abusive, but kind of loud and abrasive on set to multiple people. So I kind of find it, it really does cheapen the moment for, because now we're not talking about Lucas win. We're talking about her bring up Arnie Hammer. So yeah.
Yeah, they should have got somebody else to do that. Maybe she was the only person available. I don't know. But yeah, that was weird. Are we going into? Oh, you didn't add the story. Okay, we'll talk about it later then.
That's the Oscar thing.
Yeah,
that's what we're gonna save it for tomorrow after the
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to our weekly recommendations, Dale, what did you watch?
I spent pandemic enamored with a lot, even as a kid. Classes in high school, we would get to watch experience on them. Of course, Baz. That I decided to once again, this time starring Josh O'Connor from Charles and our favorite actor, Buckley. And it was shot during, during the pandemic. Of it, 16, 17, and the way it's like shot, it's not like when the National Theater, they're not like how they we think of it in the US of just like camera at the stage. Kind of, it was more done in the Hamilton, kind of that kind of thing. Also, the way they shot it was amazing because it was a really set prominent things where the kind of did use like all the stage as extra parts of this the set and stuff. Like for talking about Cinderella, just literally on a ladder on the stage, looking up at like where the lights would be in the room, and a shot of her is like behind a balcony thing. I love that creativity. Have given wonderfully like. Like after like he got pushed into like portrayal of Charles in the Crown. He's a really talented actor. If you ever have the chance, to watch National, I was originally intending to watch Gwendolyn Street, Brendan Quick, Summer's Night's Dream, as I've been a while. I was like, you know what? Let me see Romeo and Juliet. For a beautiful, amazing fan of like, and yeah, everybody's seen Romeo and Juliet, but it's good to also see it on stage ish language stuff like that. So has it's very well included. They kind of read characters of being as LGBT. Portrayal. So wonderful, wonderful project.
Okay. I watched The Last of Us. I finally started it last week. My best friend and I, we do this where we'll pick a show or a movie and we'll watch that for like the entire time it's airing. So we were gonna watch Velma, but because the reviews were so terrible, we skipped that one and we went straight to The Last of Us because I was hearing so many good things about it. Did not play the game, don't play video games, don't know anything about the story. So I felt like I think what this adaption does really well is like for the people who don't know anything about the game, it explains everything really well. Like it gives you like a really good setup. You're invested in the stakes like immediately. Like you already feel so invested in the world. Which I love. I really appreciate that. Because there's some adaptions from stories that I did. Like, when I started watching Game of Thrones, I didn't know anything about the books. So it was a drag getting through those first couple of episodes. I was like, who are these people? I don't know. I don't understand anything that's going on here. And I feel like The Last of Us did a great job of just like explaining what's going on, what the stakes are, who the characters are. Like, they did a great job at that. I almost cried, honestly. If you know the part, you know the part. Like, I literally almost cried because I was like, oh my God. Nico Parker, who is the daughter of, I know she pronounced her name differently now. It used to be Tandy Newton, but now it's like Tanduay Newton. I think it's that. That girl can act. Like, she killed it. She was so amazing in this. Like, I can't wait to see her do more things because she was amazing in this role. Like, so good.
So I have a question. So remember last week when I said, told me not to spoil it. So, question I have is when she walked into those old white people house and she was just there. Oh, okay. Like, I was like, you black, run. Why are you there?
Yes. Yes. I was saying the same thing as I was watching it. I said, why are you investigating? Like, we don't do that. We don't investigate. As soon as I would have slipped on the little blood, I said, okay, well, no, before that, when the dog refused to go into the house, I was like, why are you still going into the house? Like, dogs be knowing stuff. Like, I don't know how many movies do we have to watch before we trust the animals. Like, the animals know what's going on before we know what's going on. I would not have set foot in that house, but it's okay because she didn't die there. But like, if she would have, I would have been pissed because I was like, girl, that's not what we do. But anyway, she did have a Destiny's Child poster up in her room, so I was like, we're down, we're here. We're doing this. I loved that. But yeah, anyways, it was really good. Like, I cannot wait. I don't think I've been this hyped for a show since I watched House of the Dragon. Like, this is so good. And not having played the games has given me more life because I really have no idea what's going to happen next. So I'm really excited. Very good show. And then I watched The Royal Tenenbaums.
For the first time?
For the first time.
Wow.
Yeah, with Wes Anderson. And I didn't see the hype about it. Like, I don't think it was that great.
you're looking at Wes in the early phase of his, you know, development as a auteur. So it's kind of like, I think nobody kind of mentions anymore Royal Tenenbaums. They don't mention really Bottle Rocket. They don't really mention Rushmore anymore. It's three. And I do probably Rushmore is probably my favorite. It's like up and coming is developing stuff. But yeah, so it's kind of that thing. As his style has stayed the same, but his like sensibility, his experience of stuff that works has increased. It kind of has kind of French Dispatches. The whole thing was Grand Budapest Hotel. Those movies, Simpatico. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, Fall Like a Stevenson, Last in the Vault. You have, you know, His Kingdom or Moon Knight. Like, his projects gone better and kind of go back and look at his older stuff. You're kind of like, what am I watching?
Well, yeah, and I will say that you can definitely see a lot of his stylistic choices implemented very early in these earlier stuff. Like, so I definitely saw some patterns that I recognize from his other films in this one because, again, it came out in 2001, so this is earlier stuff.
Yeah,
which is why I'm not being as harsh on it, because I feel like, you know, when a director is up and coming, like, you find your footing as you continue to make movies. So I think maybe going backwards wasn't like the best idea, because I started like in the middle. I started with Grand Budapest, and then I went up, and then I went back. So it kind of is like the trajectory is a little off, but it's okay. I wasn't too harsh on it. I do think that, I don't know, I liked all of the actors in it. I thought they were really good. It was interesting to see Gwyneth Paltrow in, like, acting, because I haven't seen her, like, acting in a while, and she has become, like, something else now. But to see her in, like, when she used to actually just be an actor, I think I respect that a lot. And yeah, I thought the performance was really good. And it was funny, but it wasn't, it was kind of like, I don't know, it wasn't all that. It was very racist in a lot of places. Like,
yeah.
Whoa. I was like, this could only have had been okay in 2001, because yikes.
Sensibilities have changed drastically from then to now.
Yeah. That kind of lessened the movie for me, honestly. Like, I was like, what? Why'd you write this? So that kind of took me out of it a little bit. And yeah, it was okay, though. It was okay. It wasn't bad at all. Stylistically, like, all the color palette, how it was shot, like, all of that, beautiful. Like, that's one thing that you can't dispute when it comes to his stuff. Like, it always is going to look fantastic, and it does. The music was fantastic. The music really was the thing that kind of kept me going. Like, they had, the soundtrack was dope. Like, so many good songs. And so many songs that I like in particular. Like, those, like late 60s, early 70s music. Like, the Ramones, the Beatles, Nico. Like, and I was like, yes, I'm living for the music here. But other than the music and the style, like, the fashion choices, I loved that. And the production design and and the performances overall. I think the story is one of the things that were a little bit lacking for me. But I will say that a lot of his staples you'll see be done better in, like, later films. The films that I love, like Grand Budapest and French Dispatch and stuff like that. So it was interesting to look back at it, because I know it's very important in, like, cinema circles. Like, people love Wes Anderson and all his movies, so it was interesting to watch them.
He also has, like, two more movies coming out this year between Asteroid City and
Full Story of Henry. He has two movies coming out this year?
Yeah, Asteroid City, and that's, like, Focus Pictures, so that might just get a theatrical release. So has The Wonderful World of Henry Schicker, which is getting a Netflix.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I was wondering when Asteroid City was coming out. Okay, cool. I'm gonna watch that. but yeah, that is it from us. We hope that you're taking care of yourselves and having a great week. Make sure to check out all of our social media. Support us if you can, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.